Hello and welcome back to Data Driven. Our next guest on the Data Driven podcast is none other than the digital diva herself, Jennifer Swanson. As the CEO of Tuckpoint Advisory Group, Jennifer doesn't just navigate the digital transformation landscape. She practically terraforms it. With an explanation of digital transformation that's so clear and compelling, it could illuminate the darkest corners of the internet. Jennifer has the uncanny ability to demystify the complexities of our digital age. Her insights don't just scratch the surface. They dive deep into the heart of how technology reshapes businesses, cultures, and our very existence. Now on to the show.
All right, hello and welcome to Data Driven, the podcast where we explore the emergent fields of artificial intelligence, data science, and of course, data engineering. And with me is my most favoritest data engineer in the world, Andy Leonard. How's it going, Andy?
It's going well, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a wild week here at Chateau Lavinia, and we've had just got back from a funeral out of state, and it's all sad and all, but it has taught me to appreciate every moment because our future is not guaranteed.
So true.
How about you? How are things by you in Farmville?
Things are good. We're in the end of February. We're doing this recording on February 27th, 2024. And, the trees have been budding now for about, 2 or 3 weeks. And you may see me rub the corner of my eye. Pollen seems to be getting there. I actually washed pollen off the windshield earlier today. True story.
Already?
Not a lot. Wow. Not a lot. Just a little bit of a dusting. But it was definitely pollen. Yeah. And we've been sneezing.
We've had interesting. We've had our first start of fake spring. It's like 50 degrees today. And then tomorrow it'll probably be below freezing. Might get snow again. Who knows? But speaking of snow, our guest today is from a place known for lots of snow.
Except this year.
We were just talking about that in the green room. Yeah,
that's right. So I'd like to welcome Jennifer Swanson to the show. She is the founder and CEO of Tuckpoint Advisory Group, a collective of digital transformation experts helping world-class organizations integrate digital technology into all areas of their business and significantly improving customer experience and their operations. So this is the second episode where we talk about customer experience and customer success. But digital transformation, if there's ever been a loaded word.
I know.
Or
I
phrase.
Know.
What is that? Because I when I was at Microsoft, they had this, the previous leader of the particular group I was in had something called Digital Transformation Academy. And I wasn't really sure what it was about. It was, to me, it was an excuse to go to Vegas and this particular executive to show off her boat collection.
But I'm
pretty sure digital transformation is more to do with actual real work.
Well, I think so. But, there's still a fair number of people walking around showing off their boats and Rolexes that are working in digital transformation, too. I will tell you that I usually lead with digital transformation because I can usually gauge whether or not somebody is going to have the slightest clue what I'm talking about when I say, well, sure, I'm a consultant. I work in digital transformation. And then I kind of watch their eyes. And if they glaze over, I leave it at that. And then I ask them about whether or not they, watch the latest, whatever sports ball thing or whatever. And then we kind of move on from there. Or if they lean in and go, what do you mean when you say digital transformation? Then I go, aha, they're at least interested, right? Like, at least they know something about this. And really, honestly, for me, digital transformation has lost all meaning, right? It is really, for me, the end tuck point. We really actually focus on operating models and how companies work with technology and people to bring value both to the company and the people that they serve, right? The employees, the customers, clients, what have you. but nobody would understand that, and that sure as heck doesn't fit on a tagline, a website, or anything else like that. So we use the vernacular of digital transformation because that's the space and the market that is sort of most often discussed. But actually, the way we describe digital transformation was in the headline you read, which is technology infusing every part of the business, right? So 15, 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, technology was the thing that drove, you know, our email, maybe our, the data stack, the, you know, the customer database, the, you know, the big computer in the back room. That's actually how my dad got his start. He worked with the computer, right? And that was in the giant clean room, right? The computer.
Nice.
Back in the 60s and 70s in grocery, that was where he got his start. Nice. Right? Technology was this thing that sat over there, and it was like a part that was one part of the business, and then the rest of the business operated sort of independently from technology. And clearly we are 50, 60 years from that genesis. And where we are now is that technology is the business and business is technology. And there's no part of any business anywhere that is not touched by technology, even in businesses that are not technical by nature. So I always tell the story, and I always say, stop me if you've heard this one, but you know, take the most offline business you can think of. And I go to masonry, right? And maybe because we did a massive backyard patio project last year, right? So here you have people who they're ordering patio pavers and bricks and mortar and all of that stuff, right? So they are coming out to my house and they are working in an incredibly manual manner of measuring and, you know, leveling and everything. And they're building things with hands and materials. But guess what? They have to order all of that. They've got to manage supply chain issues. They've got labor. They have to be paid. They have to be hired. People are finding them online through review sites, through everything else. So even these considered like offline businesses still have technology all throughout their business. And the question is, how integrated is that? How well is it managed? How intuitive is that? How easy is it for employees to manage it? How easy is it for customers to use it? How does all of that enhance the customer experience? And for small companies, sometimes the answer is it's great. Sometimes for big companies, the answer is it's great. And usually the answer is, well, you know, it leaves a little to be desired. And that's where we come in to really help think about that end-to-end experience, whether it's on the employee experience side, the customer experience side, or sort of the full stack, right? To really think about it, you know, nose to tail, stem to stern, and think about how that full experience is going to be integrated and that technology end-to-end integration is going to happen. You can't do that with teams that are functioning in silos. You have to have cross-functional teams. You have to have cross-functional organizations. You have to have funding models that support that. You have to have governance models that support that. And you have to have very different kinds of mindsets that are different than when technology was, again, the computer in the room over here and business off doing their own thing. So that's kind of my manifesto of who I am and what we do.
That is the definition of digital transformation, the single best one I've ever heard.
Thank you, Frank.
No, it's awesome because, you know, you bring up a good point that all of the way companies are structured, it was the computer people were kind of off on their own.
Yeah.
And when I switched to computer science when I was but a young man in university, my mom was horrified by the fact I would be one of those weird people in the basement.
Yes.
And
yes, with moss on his back, right? Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's my home office, ironically, is in the basement of the house. But sure. I have a window. but and plus, you know, a lot of the way that organizations are structured are very much in that kind of that free kind of modern era. And you bring up the point, like cross-functional teams, cross-functional budgets. And, you know, it's almost like, correct me if I'm wrong, that the way that companies are organized and structured is still 60 some odd years behind the curve.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, Andy, I cut you off.
Yeah, sorry. No, sorry, Andy.
No, that's okay. You asked what I was going to, so we're good. I was going for cross-functional and a little more depth there.
Yeah, and that's the part that I think is really interesting, is that I think the first wave of digital transformation was, let's apply technology to everything, right? And not to steal another very overused phrase, but that's putting lipstick on a pig, right? Because what the assumption was, we could just take technology, you know, and smack it right on top of all of the old structures, all of the old ways of doing things, the old, you know, sort of siloed structures, the manufacturing model of we do something over here and we hand it off to somebody next to us who hands it off to somebody else who hands it off to somebody else. And really, modern technology is not built that way, right? Modern technology really has a much more organic structure and has to be built in a more thoughtful, strategic, end-to-end manner if you're going to get the ROI out of it. And so that's where operating model transformation comes in, right? And that shift from project management into product management and really thinking about that end-to-end structure. And so I think that's really where I believe that second wave transformation piece is coming in. And that's where we find, you know, that's our market, is in that second wave, where people will ask me, well, what kind of technology do you work on? And we're like, yes, all of it. It doesn't matter, because it's not about the technology. It's the organizations that are not seeing their investments in that technology or those data structures or whatever it is, whatever those investments were in that first wave. The executive teams are going like, wait a minute, we were promised X, Y, and Z, and we're not seeing it. Why not? And it's because it stopped with the technology and it did not go deep enough into ways of working and into structure and into culture and into governance and all those other pieces.
I think back to when I was a younger man, and I was working in a large chemical company, and they had set up a website, right? They set up this big e-commerce thing. There was obviously the website to kind of explain the company and all that. But they had this idea where you can order directly on the web. And ultimately what happened was somebody got an email and somebody would manually key in the order into SAP.
Love it.
But you're right. Like it was really more of a pressure to get some kind of way that people can order online in a way that it was a very much a facade. And it was very much a duct tape solution. But I think back and I'm like, you know, if I could go back in time and tell myself something other than the winning lottery numbers, it would be, you have to think about the business structure that you're operating in as an IT person. And very much so, these are not IT experts. These are not, and the people on the board, they get these promises from vendors, from the news media, from this. And they don't see it because it's people, process, and technology, right? Like, and technology is only one thing of it. And AI, I think I'm seeing this all repeated, like history repeats with AI. Okay, so I'm not crazy, right? So is this kind of like AI? And I get a lot of customers say, we want to use Gen AI. For what? Mm-hmm. And when you challenge them, they kind of say, well, we want a chatbot. Okay.
For what?
You know, for what? And
yes.
I don't think people have really fully, I encourage people to think beyond the chatbot, right? Because there's going to be more use cases for Gen AI, but I think the fundamentals are people, process, and technology. What's your data supply chain look like? Governance, right? You said governance a number of times, you know, you're on the short path to being one of my favorite guests. what does governance mean to you, right? Because you're probably talking about more than just data governance.
I am. Although data governance is a really important part of it, I just think that inside of organizations, which, by the way, governance makes me like the least popular person at any dinner party, but I really do like governance, because what governance says to me is that there's inside of an organization, there is a predictable, and it doesn't have to be overly structured. It does not have to be onerous. It does not have to be, you know, death by committee, because good Lord, we need fewer of those. But there does have to be a predictable method by which ideas get floated up, prioritized, and greenlit, right? According to the outcomes and strategies that are decided as the most important ones at the top of the house, right? So in a high functioning organization, in my mind, right? And a really modern, forward thinking, outcome oriented organization, you have an executive team saying, we know what direction we're heading and we know what good looks like, right? Which means they have a clear strategy where they're going to play and how they're going to win. And they know they've defined outcomes, right? They know that's what, you know, that's what good looks like. They're not saying we want to make more money. They're saying, you know, they're saying we want to grow revenue through, you know, organic growth in this particular market. We want to do it through deepening our relationship with existing customers, like whatever that is, right? They've defined what good looks like, and they've empowered teams to say, all right, now, given that, we trust all of the business units to now go define how they're going to do that within their own spheres of influence. And those organizations are going to come back and say, all right, well, we've got 12 ideas. Here's our 12 ideas. Which three should we be working on, right? And governance is the method by which the organization surfaces those ideas, decides how those ideas are going to move forward, and goes at them. Because we can't, that organization can't go after 100 good ideas, right? Somebody shared a quote, and I won't be able to attribute it, so I'm very sorry, whoever said it and whoever shared it with me, but somebody shared with me on LinkedIn the other day something that said, priorities are like arms. Anybody who tells you that they have more than two is either delusional or lying to you, right? And so
that's a good quote.
Like, those organizations have to have a method by which they're saying not even no to things, but not now, right? And so governance, organizational governance to me, is a way by which strategy is set, outcomes are defined, and priorities are determined. And the whole organization holds hands and says, this is what we're working on, and it's okay. It's not just okay. It's required that we're not working on the things that don't fit in that bucket, right? Because that's the only way we're going to be able to get things done that we say are important. And so that governance looks different in different companies, right? But on some regular basis, the leadership, you know, probably two or three levels down, all have to come together and hold hands and say, we know what's important, we agree what's important, and we're committed to what's important, right? Now, when you get down into data governance, there's different layers, and that takes on a whole different layer of structure and meaning and things like that. But from my perspective, that enterprise governance is that ability to get everybody to hold hands on priorities.
You know, it sounds a lot like cultural governance.
Yes. Yes. Because how many times have you worked at a company where you get it, there's like a executive board meeting and everybody nods at the strategy and says, yes, this is the best strategy we've ever had in 100 years of whatever. And you look at it and you go, first of all, it's no different than the strategy we had 3 years ago, but okay. And that there's not really a lot of meaning there. And I'm not really sure what it means for me three levels down and how I'm supposed to decide what to work on, right?
Yeah.
And every vice president in that company is going to go back to their desk and work on the same projects that are their pet projects because nobody's really holding them accountable to stop working on the stuff that they just want to work on because it's their pet project, right?
Yeah.
It's a really hard thing to get everybody in a company to take some bold steps to say what's in and what's out, what we're doing and what we're putting, we're either saying no to or not now to, right?
Yeah.
It's really hard to do that.
It seems like the no or not now or not yet. That seems to be the hard one.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Wow.
Sure. So that's why we do a lot of my advisors and I end up doing a lot of what we call as therapy, a lot of therapy with the executive teams. And the other joke, I have a lot of material that I use, but a lot of it is I come in and I say, we're going to use the F word a lot feelings. We're going to talk about our feelings a lot.
That's funny.
I like that. And that's an F word I don't have to bleep.
Right.
We had our first episode go live, I think, overnight, where it was the first time we bleeped it. It was pretty funny. So, the interesting thing is that you're right. Like it's really people and egos, right? Because some people on their their pet projects. Like, how do you get them to walk away from their pet projects? Or if not walk away, put it on the shelf for later. That seems like a lot of therapy, actually.
Yeah. Well, and some of it is too, is the change that people have to make from driving their own agenda to driving the agenda of the company. That's a big, that's a big shift. From me to we is a really big shift, I think, in a lot of this. It's a really big part of why we have a lot of change management as a part of our services, right? Because I think, and we do a lot in terms of executive team dynamics, because that's really where a lot of this starts. And not just at the executive team, but that next layer down. And, you know, every layer of an organization sort of brings with it its own dynamics. What we have found really is that oftentimes it's not the executive team that has the biggest challenge, and it's not the grassroots layer. Mostly we find teams, you know, product teams in particular, even if they're new teams, you know, teams of folks that, and of engineers, especially engineers that have experience working in Agile, they're hungry for this. They're ready. They want the autonomy. They want the empowerment. They're ready to go. You know, some organizations do some work in transitioning project managers and BAs into product roles. They give them training, they give them support. When done well and done right, those folks are hungry and anxious and ready to have that empowerment and that like dedicated focus of having one thing to work on rather than being like peanut butter spread on things all the time, right? They want to really have that focus. So it's not the grassroots that struggles, and it's not the executive team. But those middle layers, you know, we always say what got them here is not what's going to get them to that next layer. And so really part of it is taking them through that that change management, to building the change muscle to say, like, you've got the right skills. You have to start to shift how you deploy them, and helping them feel safe in that deployment that they might suck at first before they're going to get good at it in that leadership mode. And that's really hard to do. It takes a commitment from that top layer, right? And support of their people to say, look, you probably are going to suck at this, and it's okay. We've got your back, right? That we're going to like help you through it. But that's a really big part of it. And that's why, by the way, what have we just been talking about in the last 5 minutes? We have not been talking one bit about technology, which is why the whole idea that this is digital transformation is such bunk, right? It's not about the technology. It's all about the people.
It's poorly named, isn't it?
It really is.
Digital is almost incidental, right? Because it's about, right. It's about the people and the process, not the technology. Yeah. Technology is that's interesting. Some time ago when I switched to working for software companies, you know, I was just like, I just appreciated the difference, because a wise man once told me, and he's since passed away, that all companies view software and technology as a necessary evil. Just some view it as more necessary than evil, and vice versa. And some more evil than necessary. And I think I get it now. I think I know why that is. Is it really boils down to how things were originally structured. It was in a lot of companies, I'm not saying all, but the general flavor is IT versus everybody else, right? That's been my experience. Maybe I'm alone in that, but it's all been varying degrees of that. And when I now see that there's a much larger reason for that, and that's interesting. So how do you, aside from therapy, I mean, how do companies get around this, right? Like, this is a mindset shift that has to start at the top or start at the bottom. And the middle management, the middle layers.
Yeah.
Poor middle management. They're always attacked from all sides. But
I know.
But how do you convince, like, in a situation where you have convinced middle management to change? What was the commonalities where they did change?
Well, so I will tell you, I've been doing this for a while, and I used to take the stance of, you know, people would say, is it better to just rip the Band-Aid off and just like reorganize a whole company in like 6 months and just get just do it everywhere all at once, make a big mess and then put it all back together? Or do you start small and roll it out? And I used to say it doesn't matter. I have since come to a different understanding, and I think I've got, you know, we can do it both ways. There's pros and cons to both for sure. But I think I'm coming around to a preference of a, maybe it's my age, right? Is that my kinder, gentler moments of that I think the best way is like luring people with, you know, sunshine and honey, right? Like you find the space where you can really prove the model with, you know, whether it's one team, you know, three teams, something. And I really like this idea of taking a narrow slice, right? From top to bottom. So you've got somebody from like, say a VP layer all the way down to the bottom. So not just taking a frontline team or two or three, but really taking a nice narrow slice from top to bottom and proving the model all the way down. So you've got advocates who can see and taste and really like be your like, oh my gosh, this actually does work, right? In like a, they can feel it. They can, you know, there's like a visceral feeling to it and they get excited about it. And then that, and start to spread it to almost like, you know, the teams adjacent to them and then the teams adjacent to them and teams adjacent to them. It takes a lot of work to find that right team, but almost in every single circumstance, the effort to find that narrow slice is entirely worth it, right? If even if it means you slow your roll by a month or two to find just that right narrow slice until they're ready, or, you know, two narrow slices and really like wall them off for a period of time, 12 weeks, 15 weeks, something like that, to get, you know, the VP, the directors, the teams themselves, get them formed, get them, you know, trained, get them up and running and get them doing a couple cadences where all of a sudden they start to feel this energy of, I do own my own destiny. I am in charge. I do understand how to work with my business partners. I do know, you know, I can, we can deliver value faster. It is better when, as a product owner, I'm sitting with my engineering team and my designer and my business partners, and we're solutioning in real time. Like all of a sudden they start to feel that. And they're releasing things in 6 weeks when they'd never done anything faster than 6 months. And all of a sudden they're going, oh, this. And guess what? That success and that feeling goes all the way up. And I think once you start to get that, then it starts to spread, right? Like a good virus through the organization and you start to go sideways. But you have to have those, you can't just have those wins be at like the junior level, you know, at the frontline level or the middle manager level. You have to sort of have it all the way up. And you have to pick people who are going to be willing to like stand on soapboxes and say the same, tell the same stories over and over and over again, and then go sit with their peers and be like, hey, I see what you're doing and that's an anti-pattern and you need to knock it off, right? Like it can't just be coming from the consultants or from, you know, whoever is the internal champion. It has to be like, you can't, this is not okay, right? They have to be, those people have to be the people that are willing to go in and be in battle with you once you go, which means sometimes it's really hard to find those folks, but it's worth the time to find those folks, you know?
I was patting my heart because I'm loving what you're saying. And I've seen this implemented a bunch of different ways. And I just wanted to get your take on it because a few minutes ago, you mentioned Agile, and I've seen from, you know, the bottom and then from maybe the, you know, the lower middle, I've seen Scrum kind of coming in and bringing with it some of the things you're talking about. There's definitely a cultural shift that has accompanied Scrum where Scrum has been implemented successfully in my experience. And I also see, you know, kind of spiders out again from that lower middle level down into more or better or starting DevOps. And those sorts of thinking where I've not seen, but here's where I've seen it fail is when people try to take just that piece that works well at the lower end and then apply it up. Right.
Yes.
I've seen that fail a number of times. And yes. And I don't know why. And it sounds like what you do is you're looking for that entire stack, that yes. silo, that yes. top to bottom, and you're fixing the rest of it.
Yes.
And so I'd love to hear you speak to that.
Because let me tell you how many organizations I've walked into where the first thing they say to me is, well, we can't do that here because we tried Agile and it didn't work. And I'm like, okay, say more, tell me more. And they're like, wow. You know, fill in the blank, how many years ago, 18 months ago, 3 years ago, whatever, last week. I don't, yeah, it kind of doesn't matter. We put everybody through Agile and I'm like, okay, wait, hold up. What do you mean by everybody? And they're like, literally the whole company. And I'm like, so it's just IT, right? And they're like, no, everybody. We turned everybody in. Everybody was an Agile team. So they went around with a fairy wand and magic pixie dust. And they're like, you're an Agile team and you're an Agile team and you're an Agile team. And they gave out little certificates and everybody was an Agile team. And they put them through like a little, you know, whatever, like a 4 week, 1 week, 12 week, whatever, dojo, whatever. And they were like, you're all Agile teams. And like, they didn't address ownership constructs. They didn't address like, you know, nobody owned anything, but you were an Agile team. And I was like, okay, well, I know what the problem is, you know, and I have at least a half a dozen clients in which that is the exact scenario, right?
Oh, wow.
And to come back in and say, okay, so yes, Agile is going to be a part of the story, but yeah. only once we address things like, what do teams own, right? What is the experience or the capability or the product that you own? And then how you deliver on it, Agile's the delivery methodology, but you don't start with Agile because Agile's a delivery methodology, right? The ownership right. construct and the strategy has to be a part of that, right? And so, you know, there's no magic pixie dust in my tool belt over here, you know? And so that's, cool. I think, a big part of it.
So what's the opposite of that? I mean, so we've talked about kind of the delivery model, the people at the bottom, yeah. lower, yeah. middle, and down. What is the complementary part of that that's from there up?
Well, some of it, a big part of it, is getting leadership to understand that they no longer, I'm just going to call a spade, they no longer get to say, the shorthand that I always have is they don't necessarily get to say that the button is blue, right? They don't get to say, they don't get to define the features. They don't get to say, I want, you know, in the data realm, their job is not to say, to draw on a little post-it note what they want the dashboard to look like. That's not the point. The point is, what questions are you trying to answer? What problem are you trying to solve? What is the customer need that we are trying to meet, right? And by the way, who's the customer, right? Like, help define that at the VP and director level, when you are yeah. talking about that top of that leadership stack, that is their job. Define the market, define the customer, define the problem. When you are getting to product teams, their job should be to say, take those problems and say, we know how to solve those because we understand those customer problems and we understand our products and we know how those things can come together. In the data realm, it's no different. We know what questions need answering. We know how we want to use the data, what insights we're trying to drive. We know what corners we're trying to see around. And those yeah. data teams know what is in every single slice of that data lake, right? They know what's there. Data visualization experts, data scientists know how to bring that to life, but yeah. you're not going to like draw me a dashboard anymore. That is, we're done with that, right? We are yeah. here to those, that middle layer is here to be the experts that you are paying them so handsomely to be, right?
So I don't want to cut you off, but I hear three tiers.
Yeah.
I hear executive, you know, director level. I hear product management.
Yes.
And then I hear the people that I was speaking to earlier. The lower, middle, and down. And that is a different way of looking at it.
Yeah. And the issue is that they all have a role to play.
Sure.
You have got yep. to get those leaders out of trying to play all three roles because that's not their job. Their job needs to be forward-looking and outward-looking. so that everybody else can be the experts that they are paying, that we're all, you know, companies pay a lot of money for the expertise at every layer. Let's let them be those experts and do their jobs.
That explains a lot of the failure I saw in my younger days, and I'm older than you, Frank. So I've seen more, probably older than you too, Jen. So, oh, Jennifer, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shorten your name without
permission.
No, I go
by Jen. It's fine. Okay, Jen or Jennifer, it's all good. Yeah, just don't call me Jenny. Good. That's the only one I don't like.
Don't do that. But no, I've seen that. I've experienced it. And I've wondered why there was this lack of harmony, you know, and I felt like I wasn't being told what I needed as a person at the bottom. And I wasn't being told what I needed. And instead, I was being told stuff that, you know, I already know how to do this. And part of what you're saying isn't the right way to do it. Some of it is.
Right.
But, you know, and it you really did a great job, you know, spelling that out. And I think that's, again, I'm going to echo Frank earlier and say that's probably the best explanation I've heard of that. So really good.
Wonderful.
But also elucidation. Articulation. That's the word I was looking for. Articulated that well. All right. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's also like, oh, that's why everything always was messed up. I don't want to give myself more work and fix it. But that's why. It was like fundamentally like the you were trying to like get like a diesel engine to run on gasoline or whatever analogy you want to use. It's just not going to work no matter how much, you know, you try. One thought I had, and this is something that I've wondered since I heard it. So, once upon a time, when I was on a cross-functional team at a very large software company, and for folks who can use LinkedIn, you can figure out who this was, I was in the office in Washington, D.C., and I was on a cross-functional team, and I heard somebody say the phrase, and it's the first time they used it at that company that I heard it, was, we want to swim in our own lanes. And I heard that, and part of my like brain was like, uh-oh. So given that cross-functional teams seem to be crucial for success in this, how do you address that? Because there's definitely a, let's be real, we're dealing with people, we're dealing personalities and egos. How do you solve the territorial challenges, or is it more therapy?
Well, there's probably, I would want to pull that person aside and say, can we talk a little bit about what was said in that meeting?
right but, well, I was but a plebe in that situation, but yes.
I mean, listen, I think, you know, without the benefit of a time machine, right? Mm-hmm. I think the reality is human beings are always difficult. We will always be difficult. It's never going to be perfect. Cross team collaboration and cross, you know, just general cross-functional collaboration is always going to be challenging. We all have our own areas of expertise, but it's the additive power of them that is always what's going to make breakthrough innovation happen, right? Mm-hmm. 1+1 is always going to equal 4, right? If you're only working by yourself or you're working within your own swim lane, you're never going to get to like next level innovation or next level, you know, whether it's service innovation or it's technical innovation or it's operational innovation, it doesn't matter, right? You're just never going to get there. And like the human history is just is like littered with evidence of this, right? Is like, it's only when cultures and people have bumped into each other, right? The salons of the 18th century, when poets and scientists came together, that's when like literally revolutions happened, right? Like this is how it works. So then the only way to deal with it is to deal with it through sort of nuance and sort of diplomacy of, yes, we do all have to own our own expertise, but it is these are the opportunities, the collaborative opportunities is where we're going to shine. So how do we do that in a way that makes us all better? You know, I just think there's no way around it other than to like greet it head on and figure out a way to do it in as non-threatening a way as possible. But there's always going to be somebody who's going to be crabby about it. And so then you just got to figure out how to like make it work with them. But mostly I think what you do is you find the people who, I don't know, I'm always the one that's like, yes, let's all get in a room and do it. Like, I just think about my last corporate experience was with a large healthcare organization in Minnesota. You can do the same thing on LinkedIn. And I will tell you that one of the most thrilling days of my career corporate wide, and we all have this, right? Of like days where you just were like, this, I can't believe I'm getting paid to do this work, right? The most exciting days of your work. Was a day where we were literally having the worst day ever. Like everything was broken. Things were really, really bad. I mean, bad. And three or four of the smartest people I literally have ever worked with in my career who were pretty high up. We were like, we were all directors, VPs. And we maybe were promoted due to the Peter principle, right? Like we had all, like we were all really smart people as like contributors and we'd all gotten promoted and we're managing people, but we were really like, we were all really good doers. And then all of a sudden found ourselves leading organizations going, why are we leading organizations? We were really good doers. And so that included like a really smart architect, a really smart engineer, a really smart product person, a really smart, you know, like strategy person. And all of a sudden we were all VPs going, how the hell did we end up here? Mm-hmm. Anyways, we all got in our room, in the room in our really fancy suits or whatever, and like with whiteboards and stuff. And we all went right back to our execution days. And we like roll literally, like I still have a vision of the chief architect, like loosening his tie, rolling up his sleeves and was like, all right, we're going to figure this out. And it was like 6 hours of the hardest whiteboarding I have ever done. And like, that was so fun. There was no ego in that room. I was like, Alex, I have no idea what you're talking about over there. Like, this makes no sense to me. Why are we doing it this way? And it was because he is like 25 times smarter than me, but like I made him explain it to me. And in doing so, he found some flaws in his thinking and we like, you know, figured it out, but there were no egos in that room. We figured some stuff out and we fixed it. That was thrilling to me. I want to be around people like that, not the people who were like, Jen, get in your lane, you know, kind of stuff. And I think you just got to figure out how to be around people like that.
That is the best answer to that. Cause I often wonder, I often think about that and I hear the term cross-functional teams. And like, I know that just the way the wind blows, you'll start hearing, you know, stay in your own lane and things like that. And like, and I understand both points of view, but there's a tension there. And I think that was a really good solution to it. I ever since that happened, like, I'll say 8 years ago, since I heard that phrase, I was like, that always kind of stuck with me. It was like, and then I bumped into somebody else who was on a cross-functional team and was very stressed out. A couple of years later, when I rejoined said company, and she's like, oh, it's, you know, she was explaining the situation. I was like, oh, is so-and-so saying that, well, you got to stick your own swim lanes again. Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. That is, who's now, next, right?
Right. No, it's interesting. So I don't have any further questions unless you want to switch to the pre-can questions. I love this conversation. This is awesome because it helped. Yes. It helped illuminate a lot of things that I never understood why the situation was so blanked up.
See, and it's therapy, Frank. I'm telling you, it really is. It's therapy. Like,
I can look back now on a lot of situations where I you feel like you're stuck in a Dilbert cartoon and it's just like, why does it have to be this way? Or why is it all like Dilbert's popular for a reason? Like, why is that such a common thing? Right. And now that kind of helps. I have a lot of more perspective than it is therapy. Very well done. You're bravo. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Right. Pre-canned questions.
Go. You want to kick us off or do you want me?
I'll kick us off. How did you find your, I know we're talking about data, but how did you find your way into this line of work? Did this line of work find you, or did you find this line of work?
I found this line of work by a very long and winding road. And what I will just say, I won't take you through all the nitty gritty details, but I found this line of work because, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, my dad is a technologist. And my mom actually got her career. She's actually an artist by education, but didn't want to be a starving artist. So she went to work in banking and was a vice president in banking, but was really a relationships person, right? She did a lot of things with trusts, and she did fundraising late in her career. So she was a really good relationships person. And so early in my career, what I figured out was that I was bilingual. I could speak business and I could speak IT. And like back in the day where that was a much thicker wall between business and IT, I could speak both. And I just always really enjoyed being able to bring technical people and business people together and be able to explain those two things. And that always served me well. And that's how I ended up in this line of work, because I really liked being the connective tissue between those two things.
That is awesome. So what is your favorite part of this gig?
Okay. So what I will say is that as a consultant, I get to be a part of lots of different kinds of companies. So I worked corporate and, you know, client side for most of my career. I started consulting about 6 years ago, and I would get impatient when I would work with companies. I'd work there for a while and then I'd be like, yeah, what's next? Like, you know, and I worked a couple places for a long time. My longest gig was 8 years at one company, and that was fine. But really, in those 8 years at that one company, it was Capella University, I had 5 jobs in 8 years. So it was never too long, right? Like I get antsy after a while. And what I really like about consulting is my ability to go in, learn a ton about a company and a culture and meet all these different kinds of people and feel like I really get to experience what it's like working in and with different companies, but then being able to kind of like jump around. It's like a sampler, right? And I love that, because I really find organizations fascinating. And so that's my favorite part.
Interesting. So we have three complete the sentences. The first of three is complete the sentence. When I'm not working, I enjoy blank.
This one is hard because I work a lot. So I'm going to say I really enjoy reading. So I'm a big reader, and I know you have some questions about books later. Cool. So I'll just leave that one. I really enjoy reading.
Cool. So our second one is, I think the coolest thing in technology today is blank.
I'm going to answer this one with how easy it is to experiment. So especially with things we talked about like ChatGPT and AI, there's such a low barrier to entry, like just being able to go and like play around with stuff and experiment with it. I think that's fantastic. You know, again, 15, 20 years ago, you would have had to have had special access to a university computer or whatever to be able to do some of this stuff. And now it's just so easy to just experiment and try things out. I see that with my kids too. I just love it.
That's cool. And the third and final complete the sentence is, I look forward to the day when I can use technology to blank.
Okay. I have given this thought. I want a fully integrated solution of laundry from hamper to washer to dryer back to drawers. Like, I don't even want to touch it. Like, it has to be like a closed system. I don't want to touch it. I hate doing laundry. It's like my least favorite thing. I've tried outsourcing as much of it as possible, but at some point I do have to put it away and like I have to like touch it. And I want a totally closed system. That's what I want.
I have three boys and I totally get it.
Yes. Yeah. You know. Okay. Yeah.
So our next is share something different about yourself, but we remind all our guests, we're trying to keep our clean rating.
Sure. Of course.
Just so you know.
Well, so I will share this. And it's something kind of new that I'm really enjoying. My oldest son is a freshman in high school, and he has joined his robotics team.
Oh, cool.
And they are entering their big competitive season. And in fact, he is going off to a regional competition overnight, leaving his mother. I have to put him on a bus.
No. Oh,
it's okay. It's okay. He's done overnight camps before. So like we've been, at least he's been away from his mama before, But he had his first kind of big competition. They kind of had a practice this last weekend, and he's kind of a big deal on the team, and I'm very proud of him. And like learning all about robotics competition, which is a big national organization, and I'm really kind of into it. And so we are a robotics family, and it's very exciting. So
that's very cool. Very cool. My oldest is going to be a freshman in high school. And I was telling him the other day, like, he's ready. I'm not ready.
Yeah. Just you wait until driver's ed hits. And then it's like a whole other level.
Oh, I'm not there yet. I was hoping for autonomous cars to solve the problem for me, but I'm running out of time.
Yeah.
You did drop the hint about books. So Audible's a sponsor. Yes. What books can you recommend?
Well, I will tell you, I think my family may be the top purchaser from Audible, because all three of my boys, my husband and my two sons, like, we have the annual subscription for Audible, and it might last us 2 months by the rate that they read Audibles. I personally am a big romance novel reader, which I share openly, no shame. And so for the romance readers out there, I will tell you that the Penny Reed series, the beard series. So Andy, I will tell you, you have quite a good beard. It's a romance novel, and it's the beard series by Penny Reed is absolutely wonderful. Very funny, very sweet, not suitable for this podcast if it's a family podcast, because it's a little steamy, but it is very good and very sweet. So.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You can go to thedatadrivenbook.com or thedatadrivenbook.com, depending on how you want to pronounce it. You'll get one free audiobook on us. And if you subscribe and become a permanent annual or monthly subscriber, we'll get a little bit of kickback and help support the show. And the reason why, this is actually funny, the reason why we kind of are fairly strict, not strict, but we're sticking to our guns, so to speak, on the whole profanity thing is largely because, obviously, there's a professional image, but largely because I like to listen to some podcasts, and I can't do that when the kids are in the car. So it kind of becomes this, it's more of a flexibility thing as opposed to, obviously, I guess those novels you probably wouldn't be listening to with the kids in the car anyway.
You might, those might be better for after the kids go to bed and you're having some me time, just saying, but that'll be fine.
So where can folks find, I'm sorry, Andy, this was your question.
No, you go ahead. No, I was done.
Can't stop talking today. where can folks find out more about you and what you do?
So the easiest place is www.tuckpoint.com is probably the easiest place. And then also on LinkedIn, I'm at JG Swanson. I assume you'll have both on your show notes and things like that.
We'll make sure we put that on the show notes. Yeah.
Both of those places. So either for the company or for me personally, those are the two easiest places.
Cool. Sounds good. Any parting thoughts?
No, but you guys are delightful. I just this has been a nice hour to spend with you. I just have loved it. So
thank you. I really appreciate you illuminating a lot of mysteries that I just assumed were just part of that was just the cost of doing business, was dealing with these kind of weird stuff, or being in IT, right? Being one of those weird people in the basement thing. And now I kind of have a lot more. A therapy is a great analogy, because it's like you walk out of a good therapy section, and you're like, that's why I feel right now.
Yeah. Good. That's really good. I scored a compliment on the beard. You know, that's always a win.
It's a very good beard. I really like it. I'm digging it.
Thank you. It was a great show for us as well. And I can't wait for our listeners to get a chance to see it. And we just launched a new service earlier this week, in fact, where people can subscribe and see videos, these videos behind the scenes. They've been asking for that for what, Frank, 7 years since we started, and we wanted to do it when we first started talking about it. We were like, this would be great. And then we just found a platform and the stars aligned, and we launched, like I said earlier this week. I don't think we even have any subscribers yet. I'm probably a little too transparent in that, but we'll see.
I'll go out and subscribe. I'll be your first.
That'd be kind. But it's, you know, the way we look at things a lot of the time is it's like it's an experiment. You mentioned that earlier when you were talking to your clients, is that you do a lot of experiments and see how things roll. Well, if we get one, awesome. If we get 100, that'd be nice, you know. But we started the podcast and we thought we were going to do, I don't know what, Frank, 10 episodes. And this is going to be, around 375 or something like that.
348,
333. Okay, sorry.
Almost 360, basically. We're gonna do a 360 retrospective for show 360. Sorry, I spoiled the surprise, everyone. But
that's okay.
It's a good tease.
That's right.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for having me, you guys. I really enjoyed
it. Thanks. It was a great show. And we'll let Bailey finish the show. Awesome.
Thank you, Jennifer, for an excellent show. No longer will I cringe when someone says digital transformation now that I understand the true meaning on the term. We know you're busy and we appreciate you listening to our podcast. But we have a favor to ask. Please rate and review our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you subscribe to us. You have subscribed to us, haven't you? Having high ratings and reviews helps us improve the quality of our show and rank us more favorably with the search algorithms. That means more people listen to us, spreading the joy. And, can't the world use a little more joy these days? So, go do your part to make the world just a little better and be sure to rate and review the show. Until next time, this is Bailey signing off.